Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Well, I hope you watched all 25 of the previous movies to prepare for Skyfall, James Bond.
I have spent my time since we last spoke a week ago doing nothing but that. I lost my job. My husband left me. But, you know, I'm caught up for the podcast.
It's only like 57 hours worth of movies.
Well, granted, about at least half of it is well worth watching. And the other half is entertaining enough.
That's right. And that's a pretty good percentage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for a series as long as that.
Yeah.
I consider there are three. Now, I haven't rewatched some of them, so I could be wrong. Three perfect Bond movies.
Well, ooh, tell me.
Close to perfect.
Tell me which ones.
Okay. Dr. No.
Uh-huh. That is like the first one, right?
That is the first
one. All right, cool.
And Sean Connery will remind you so much of what they do. I mean, you can tell that Daniel Craig?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Daniel
He's
Craig.
He's got two first names. Sometimes I get mixed up which one goes first.
Yeah.
get up it, I do. Anyway, you find out he kind of goes back to that. He's kind of cold-hearted. And then Casino Royale with Daniel Craig. Mm. Not perfect, but I can overlook its faults.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one, Skyfall, which I believe is perfect. Oh,
very nice.
So, yes.
Cool. Yeah, I also loved this movie.
Yes.
I thought it was great. I thought it was so good, and it was so final that, you know, I really thought they should have ended Daniel Craig's run with this one. But I haven't seen Spectre. It's out in the movie theaters as we record this, so I can't comment. Maybe it's so incredibly good that they did it. But it had such a sense of finality to it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't it? The Skyfall?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was like, this is the end.
Well, you know what? It did and it didn't. Because the perfect thing about it, and okay, if you haven't seen it, you just go watch it. Watch Casino Royale. If you haven't seen the Bond movies, I'm sorry for you. But watch Casino Royale and then watch this. That's all you need to know. Now go away.
No Quantum of Solace in the middle?
I haven't watched it, but as I understand from Rose, that's the one everybody likes to pretend never happened.
It is definitely the weakest of the three. There's no doubt whatsoever. Okay. Whatsoever.
You've seen it then.
I have seen it, yeah. But
Are
I'm
you
just
a completist?
Wondering. Well, of course.
Okay.
You knew that about me.
I kind of thought it, but this
I was
really
like, you can't read
it.
Book three without reading book two. Well, anyway, yeah. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. I'm going to let that pass.
You're going to tell me that, yes, of course you do. Okay.
When it's James Bond movies, I feel free to. That's like the Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I have to watch them if they have a crappy review.
Oh, that's true, too. That's true.
So.
I really felt that Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace and Skyfall, I wonder if they intended that to be a trilogy. I'm wondering if they had a plan, you know, when they did Casino Royale. Because there is an arc, especially with M and James Bond. There's this arc that goes from Casino Royale to the end of Skyfall.
Yeah, but is Quantum of Solace necessary for that arc? Because I didn't feel I was missing anything.
See, did it move that forward? That's a good question.
Or did it just kind of keep things where they
were? Probably kept things how they were. That's probably fair. Yeah, I'm trying to think what major happened between them two. Because, yeah, in Casino Royale, M was already calling him a murderer. You know, he was questionably doing things and she was getting pretty upset with him.
Well, that's where he gets elevated to be a 00.
Yeah, yeah.
By the end of the movie.
Yeah, that's right. But still, I mean, she in Quantum of Solace, he was out of control, according to her. And he was killing people and her perception was that he was just doing it unnecessarily.
Vesper left him with a lot of pain, man.
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly.
Sounds very modern to me.
If people don't know what we're talking about, that's crazy. Well, I mean, we're making zero sense, but
I said at the beginning, mm-hmm. go away and watch those two movies and then come back.
Absolutely.
We're not messing around here. Well, yeah. Because what was I going to say that made me say that in the first place?
That made you say
we were
Vesper?
Talking about him mm-hmm. and M. Oh, yeah. When you said it felt so complete, and I'm like, well, in a sense it did. His and M's story arc felt complete. But the brilliant, brilliant thing about this movie was that at the very, very end, it started it off to be at the beginning again. Because you have M, who's a man. You have Moneypenny. However, she's different or whatever, but she's the secretary. That's just how it was.
Yeah.
You have the quartermaster, which I didn't know Q stood for quartermaster. I love that. But you have – so British. But you have Q. Uh-huh. Now, it's a different kind of a Q than the old wonky Q with his, you know, pens that shot people and stuff. But you've got it all set up to go into the future with a kind of a different but still the same attitude. Everything set up as it was in the book, as it was at the very beginning of the series. That's what made that so brilliant.
Okay. I give you that.
Thank you.
Yeah. But one of the things that was compelling to me is that, you know, both Bond and M, in fact, James Bond said to M, so we're both like washed up. I mean, it's and it is a response to that. It's like we are the old way of doing things and we're tired, and they felt that together, and then they ended it together, and that's to me what felt so final. And then you're right, it went on and there was a rebirth
for their story arc, because what they both found in that was they were being told by person after person after person, because that was you know, of course, the underlying theme, which I found so interesting. There was so much that was so great about this movie. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I found really interesting was you had that huge theme of the old versus the new.
Right.
And how many people who are at least my age are going around going, is it just me and I'm getting crotchety? Or are you getting tired of getting told, well, sorry, you don't understand how this works. Well, sorry, this is not how we do it anymore. Well, sorry. And it's like, but our ways still work. We might need all this stuff still. And I can't think of anything specific right at the moment. And I can use an iPad. And I can do these very – I have a cell phone.
I can think of something that's
– You know.
Yeah. And at the same time, the movie, like we were talking before this thing, it makes a political statement, which is a sort of the same thing. It's saying there's an old way of doing things, and the new way – people seem to think that the old way is irrelevant, but there's a reason that the old way was the way it was, you know? And it's like, you know, now all this stuff is irrelevant. We're in this new thing, and I don't know if we're all throwing flowers in the air or whatever the heck they think, but it's still very dangerous, and we're not all getting along, and there are things that need to be done, right?
Yeah, because here's the thing. Because 5% of the world might feel like, oh, we can all be intelligent and get along and we'll just argue with our words and our, you know, trade pacts and things. But a large percentage of the world doesn't get that. ISIS. You said political.
Yeah.
The leaders of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just moving in. And I look at that and watching this movie the second time, I thought, wow, this movie's only 3 years old. And when I watched it the first time, I was thinking, okay, 9/11 and all the things that came from that and the newer way of thinking of, you know, we shouldn't do this to these people. We should be very nice to them. I'm not against being nice to people, but you have to be smart about what you do with
there has to be
politics and war and intelligence and everything. And then now you've got Putin in charge, and I'm like, oh, it's like the Cold War again. That's exactly how I feel. Like when I was young, growing up, it's the same feeling. I don't trust him as far as I could throw him. And so then you have ISIS, which was never around before. You didn't have all that. I mean, you had September 11th, 9/11, but it wasn't this huge, massive movement of people that's going around cutting people's heads off.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just escalated. And I went, wow, this movie makes more sense now than it did then.
It did. And I remember when I watched it the first time, I really felt that it was a statement about Snowden. And the bad guy, let's see, what was the bad guy's name?
Oh, gosh.
I'm trying to remember here.
He was so brilliant.
He was He's such a wonderful bad guy. Is it Silva?
Silva.
Yeah.
With his terrible hair, but his wonderful slow way of talking.
Yeah, yeah.
And his mommy issues. Huge mommy issues.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you know that a person's really bad when his cell is clear plastic or glass. And it's in a dark room and he's sitting by himself.
Oh, you know, yes.
That has happened in a lot of movies.
Terrible. That's why I liked some of the, just to stop that for a second, but some of the interplay between him and James Bond, where he's really trying to pull James Bond over to his side because he's like, we've both been betrayed by M. We've both, you know, we've both have reason to hate her. We're like brothers, you know, we're the same rats in the top of the tree kind of thing, all twisted. And he's, you know, and then he's trying to bug him and he's doing his little, oh, have you done this? And he's kind of like tracing on his skin with his finger. And Bond goes, what makes you think that would be the first time? And he just pulls back like he, it was a hot iron and you ruined my moment.
Yeah.
Moving to step two.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You could see it was all so dramatically planned for him. And when people didn't go along with what he planned, he'd really get pissed off.
Right.
I loved it. Yeah. Which is a villain, of course. But yeah, he did it wonderfully and personally.
Yeah. So the villain in this is a very computer savvy guy. In fact, a lot of the stuff he's doing is, via computers. You know, he's talking to Bond about how he can do this with just pressing a button and stuff. It reminded me a little bit about Sneakers. Do you remember Sneakers?
I never saw it. Well,
yeah, it's
I don't
a good
think
movie.
I saw it.
It's a good movie. I really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Redford and Ben Kingsley.
And maybe Danny Glover or somebody like that?
No, Poitier is in it. Dan Aykroyd and River Phoenix.
Tons of people.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Okay.
Well worth watching. So okay. Sneakers, yeah. It reminded me of that because of, you know, this guy's talking about how the world's all connected and stuff and what he's able to do from his remote island. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting, and that's why I think it came out right around when Snowden, I don't even remember what year Snowden was doing his thing, but it's probably, it was before this. So, but I remember when I watched it, I felt like it was really a statement about Snowden, and I didn't feel it so much this time, but maybe because so much has happened since then. You know, a lot of water under the bridge there, but... But yeah, it's really interesting.
Well, you know. And you can say it's about Snowden, or he's just the one who got caught, or who was publicized. You know,
just to be clear before you say that, Silva was not like Snowden in that he did the same thing that Snowden did. Snowden did a totally different thing than this guy did. This guy was, you know, actually trying to destroy things actively through computers, right? But he's talking about how computers are connected and he was using computers to do this and that. And
He was using them to pursue M and freak her out by attacking everything that she loved and cared about, which was
he was able to blow up her office.
Yeah, her country from the computers. People who worked for her and everything. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But he did make the point. He's like, oh, could I bring an airliner down? Could I do this? Could I do that? Yes, I could with this plane. Could I ruin this economy? So they were making a real clear point there that people, you know, there are people who are super smart and who are unscrupulous for whatever reason that may have nothing to do with insanity, but that you can't trust. You have to keep an eye on these people because they're going to do something awful.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the old versus new, traditional versus modern. And it's not just everything modern. It's just this way of not looking at reality for what it is. of I would like to think things are like this, and therefore I'm just going to act as if everything is. And that's you know, what did Jesus say? Be innocent as doves, but wise as serpents. Hmm. Well, you know,
yeah.
you want to think the best of everyone, but you're stupid if you go out, I don't know, into a terrible neighborhood at 2 a.m. walking with gold necklace on or whatever. I'm just saying, you know, right. It's that kind of thing. Don't be stupid. And so that was what made also the choice of not only the kind of villain that he was, which was brilliantly updating that supervillain idea, but also Q. So when Bond and Q have that conversation.
Good point. That's a great point. Yeah.
It was like the heart of the movie because Q is young. He's, you know, obviously a computer nerd. He thinks he knows everything. And Bond is old and he's a field man. And what's the point of that? And he says, age is no guarantee of efficiency. And Bond says, and youth is no guarantee of innovation.
That's right.
and then a little later, Q says, I could, you know, kill somebody from pushing a button on my computer while I'm sitting like in my bathrobe or something. And Bond says, but should you pull the trigger? Sometimes you have to go see to find out. That's paraphrasing. And so that's kind of the whole argument of the movie in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah. You're absolutely right. You're right. Did you see, let's see. Yeah, that's it. I just looked this up. It's a movie called The Gatekeepers.
No.
Well worth your time.
Is that a documentary?
It's a documentary, yeah.
Maybe I've heard of it.
And it has four or five of the previous heads of Israeli Secret Service.
Okay.
I remember very early on in the thing, this person describing killing a terrorist with a button.
Oh, and I think you've told me about this. Yeah,
it's really intense to watch him talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I mean, it definitely affected him, and that's the world we live in. Where, man, it's a tough deal. You know, where, you know, all this digital connectivity. I don't know. It's good and bad, both, right? We've got good things and bad things about it.
Right.
So, but we can't ignore the bad stuff. I don't know. I'm one who never got as riled up as everybody got about Snowden. You know, everybody on the internet seems to be so upset about what the government was doing. But I'm looking at, like, the Paris thing. And there was a news story, like, the day after Paris that said that the authorities somehow knew that these guys have talked to Syria in recently.
Right.
And I'm like, I really want them to know that. You know, that is good information, and I'm glad that they have it, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking about that kind of thing when I was getting a glass of water earlier today, and I was thinking, what kind of other things are people going to do? Besides, I guess that's not as big as blowing something up, but I sure hope people are paying attention to who's calling who and talking about what. While I'm getting my glass of water that I must have, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to be paranoid, but it was, you know, the Paris attacks happened, just for context for everyone, last Friday. I watched the movie Sunday night. And we just sat there going, holy crap, that's just what M is talking about. She has to go to a, you know, one of these government hearings about why shouldn't we, I guess, throw you in jail because, you know, MI6 got blown up and all this stuff happened. And she was saying, she also had a wonderful speech which said, who do you fear? Our world is more opaque in the shadows. Because she was saying, used to be you could say it's the Russians, it's the so-and-so. Well, it's not like that anymore. And then she says, how safe do you feel? We are now not now that strength. And or she starts doing the Tennyson poem, which is wonderful. But the whole time, of course, that's intercut with the villain's on his way to try to get her. Bond is on his way to try to get the villain. But in that movie, the context works, but also for our lives, it works. You're watching it going, she's right. This is how it is. And maybe I feel that way more because I have a brother who's worked for his career in military intelligence. And so he doesn't ever say much, but every so often he'll say something and I'm like, oh my gosh, please, I'd rather be a stupid sheep. Don't tell me anything.
Yeah.
You know.
And thank God those guys are there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everybody who's doing that, thank you very much. But yeah, it is a good point, you know, because the thing is, we don't want to walk around afraid all the time.
Right.
And, you know, I have flown a lot, you know, as I've said before, and to go through security all the time is such a big pain in the butt. And sometimes I wonder if it's really helping anything at all, you know. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's some things that need to be done, and we can do that and remain unafraid.
Yeah.
Right. And we should be doing things. So, you know, I don't know that I've heard anything from the Snowden revelations that I was so alarmed at that I, you know, we believe, you know, when we watch TV, you know, whenever there's somebody that gets murdered or something on a TV show, it's like we know about that guy's life immediately.
Right.
So it's almost as if I think most Americans assume that a lot of stuff the government can do. And the question is, can, you know, will they be doing it for good or not? You know?
Yeah. See, I didn't pay much attention to the Snowden thing because I just went, governments do that stuff.
Yeah.
That's what government,
that's,
I mean,
that's every the long way government of saying in what the you world just said in a sentence. Right.
Does that stuff. Every government. And do we want to do the bad stuff? No, but sometimes, you know, you make mistakes. You have to do things to counter other people. I don't know. Should you go around telling everyone? I don't think one man's smart enough to know that, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And he sure got a lot of attention out of it. I mean, like I say, I didn't pay any attention. I just looked at him and went, I'm sorry. Maybe this puts me with James Bond. I'm like, oh, traitor.
Yeah.
Who's your allegiance to? Not with the people that you said it was. You lied to them.
Mm-hmm.
You stole from them. And them was me.
Yeah.
Was that a wise choice to make? I don't know, but you broke your promise. Can I really believe you now? You know? And he likes to stand out there and be like, I'm super honorable. I did this thing. Because, well, you know, it's not like he was, it's not like, I don't know. I can't think of a good example. There are examples of whistleblowers where it needs to happen, where you tried to go through other, you know, did he try to go through a lot of other ways? Maybe you know.
I don't know. I don't know.
It seems like I recall him saying,
I watched a movie called Citizen 4, which really is an interesting thing to watch. It's very good. But a lot of that was filmed while things were happening, you know, like when they were, you know, Glenn Greenwald and them trying to contact him to get the information he had so that, and what his motives were and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he said something in there about trying to do something internally. I don't know for sure.
Well,
don't recall, but
yeah, I don't know. Like I say, I didn't pay attention. And so of course what you're getting is my top of the head, like, but I, you know, for everyone like him that we know about, there's probably a zillion others. That's what the spy game is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, I have to say, one of the things I loved, of course, my picture of the spy game, which I realize is Hollywoodized, is the way this movie evoked the old Bond movie so
nicely. It really did. It really did.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sorry. No,
go ahead.
Do you know, I mean, there were some things I learned about Bond in this movie that I don't know are if they're traditional Bond, that he was an orphan. Has that been established before?
Know.
So, yeah, see, I don't know that his, you know, he was, came from a rich family, obviously. Big old house, you know. All that was interesting. And then, but you're right. What you said there was just perfect because, you know, he had his Aston Martin in a garage, you know. He even got the music when he pulled the cover off it.
The old music comes on and you're just like, oh yeah. He has his like ejector button that he teases Judy Dench with.
Yeah. And the shaken, not stirred, they always
I said perfectly
really
shaken. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, but also too the settings. Because you go to is it Singapore where they're in this super high tech building having he's tracking down the assassin and they're having the big fight, which was so beautifully done, all in silhouette. Because one of the things I liked that harkens back to the Dr. No, which is they didn't feel like they had to show you breaking somebody's neck and blowing their head off. They didn't feel like when he was, you know, making love to the beautiful woman, they implied all of it. Right, I didn't have to watch it happening. And I was like, that kind of even goes back to the standards of the very first movies where you knew what was going on. But I didn't have to be up close and personal. And so it was just much classier. And it allowed you to focus more on what was going on otherwise, too. And so, and then you get to the old island and you have that place where they were gambling. And it was just, oh, it was just so classic looking. Mm-hmm. And I just loved the way Sam Mendes, what a genius, or the people looking at them.
Very nice.
It's just so wonderful.
Yeah. You know, in Casino Royale, the chase scene at the beginning of that movie.
Yes. Is
like, I mean, that rivals Ben-Hur. It was really good.
Oh, it was amazing.
Right. I love to watch that.
Definitely.
Yeah. My workout routine. That's how I get to work every day.
That's why you're so fit.
Yeah, mine only last 2 minutes.
That's okay. You get up on that girder and go down, please. Yeah.
Excuse me, could you lower this, please? Can you, someone? Anyone?
This bomb's gonna go off any minute.
That's right. So wow, we've covered a lot of territory in a very short amount of time.
I guess so.
Yeah. But I loved what M had to say. I actually have it quoted right here. But I just love it because, again, so M and Bond, I just like their relationship a lot.
Yeah.
Because, M is Bond's boss and she always has to tell him to do stuff, right? That's not good stuff to do most of the time. But to have them both kind of feeling like they're reaching the end at the same time, I thought was really good. And then that speech that you mentioned where she defended the existence of James Bond and all her agents, right, to this committee, I just thought it was great. And, that Tennyson thing, like you said. But just to reiterate what you said, it says, do we need agents? The 00 section, is it all rather quaint? Well, I suppose I see a different world than you do. And the truth is that what I see frightens me. I'm frightened because our enemies are no longer known to us. They do not exist on a map. They're not nations. They're individuals. And look around you. What do you fear? Can you see a face, a uniform, a flag? No, our world is not more transparent now. It's more opaque. It's in the shadows. That's where we must do battle. So before you declare us irrelevant, ask yourselves, how safe do you feel? Just one more thing to say, and then my late husband from Tennyson, it says, we are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven. That which we are. One equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will, to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield.
Yeah.
Very powerful. And Judi Dench was M, by the way, for those who don't know. She's fantastic.
Good. And I have to say, I've seen this in a couple other movies where it was appropriate. I loved the fact that when the sharp, harsh light hit her face, it was a mass of wrinkles. She's not afraid to look her age.
Yeah. Yep. Very true.
And that's part of this, too.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is I looked up the Tennyson and the line right before when it starts, though we are not now that strength, it says, though much is taken, much abides.
Hmm.
And I was like, yeah, that's that. I was really surprised. I remember really loving the statement this movie made the first time around, and I loved it even more this time around. It's just part of it maybe is because as somebody who doesn't always agree with the main way that everybody talks, largely due to being Catholic, I have to say, which reinforces some of that. I guess my super liberal Catholic friends would be horrified, but but I feel out of step with a lot of what goes on, and you just kind of I look to the way Tom's parents would react to things and just go, yep, they would get it. you know?
Well, yeah. You know, and I feel the same way. There are some things that I really hate how the world's gotten liberal and conservative.
I mean,
why aren't there things like the security of the country that used to be universal? It was like, you know, everybody understood that, you know, without the country, you know, all these other arguments aren't going to take place if we're all scrambling trying to figure out how to have a country or how to build an economy and how to do all this other stuff. There's a lot of these arguments that we have every day that are going to be irrelevant. And I can understand it's like an impulse. It seems to me, and maybe I'm wrong, okay? But it seems to me that there's an impulse. People want to get past this stuff, right?
Right.
It's like we want everybody to get along, so it's almost like we want to will this just to be. And we mm-hmm. want to ignore certain things and, it just seems to me that that's what they're trying to do. But it's like what Em is saying. We can't do that because we still need to protect ourselves and we need to be strong because the worst thing for the world is going to be a weak United States. And we're getting weaker all the time in a big hurry.
And of course, in her point of view, I really did love, I have to say, this was so British. There was no America in this.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, and I'm putting it on myself here, right?
Oh, no, I get that. No, I'm just saying, I just love that. But the thing I was just thinking while you were talking is, I think what it comes down to is where we're not meeting in the middle is, and as I said, you know, I've got my husband on Facebook. He, when people friend him, he just reads everything that goes into his feed. Hmm. So he's got a bunch of relatives who are just like the most liberal people ever. We have a bunch of friends who were just like, wow, I can't believe this guy's linking to this super conservative stuff. We're just like, are we the only ones who are kind of really in the middle more? But what happens is that gives us plenty to talk about. And I think about it and I think the problem is that one side wants justice, but they're not so worried about mercy. They feel like that's weak. The other side wants mercy, but they're not so worried about justice. And when I'm saying that, I'm thinking of, like, you'll hear policemen now saying, I can't really get out of my car and do my job anymore because now people are doing, like, black youths, some of them, are doing things to get me out of my car and put me in a position where then they're taunting me and videotaping while they're doing it. Now, this isn't everyone. I realize there's a problem that's been uncovered with, you know, policing and all this stuff. But what happens is it gets expanded. And are people at that side where you're like, oh, I want to show mercy to these people who are being abused by the cops? Well, where's the justice too? You have to have a balance. And on the side where, you know, you've got like Donald Trump, don't let those Syrians in. You know, you're just like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, you can't just make these blanket statements. There's tons of these people who need help.
Yeah.
There has to be a way to apply mercy and justice together at the same time. And you're not going to do it if you're only going to look at one side of the equation and both sides. That's what they do. And I know I have my blind spots, but I'm just saying, I just look at this and it drives me nuts. And that's why I love to get to the Catholic part, the Catholic Church. Because when you look and read the catechism about how to do a lot of these things, they're always about, they don't let you forget either one. And so if you get frustrated by reading what the Catholic Church says about something, stop and think about, is it the mercy or the justice that's pissing you off? Because that's the part you need to work on. You know?
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to put that. I think, I understand a little bit better because it is tough. It is tough. There seems to just be this divide and it's getting wider, but
yeah,
there's just not a lot of, us going on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we have an us and a them, you know, it's probably always been this way, but we have an us and a them. Yeah. It's very pronounced in the United States. And, you know, it's got to be tough to be the president to sit there and try and figure out how to do something. I can't imagine that, you know, as president, you're going to do anything that, you know, half the country isn't going to be angry with you about.
Oh, yeah.
But,
that's why it's important to understand compromise. Yeah.
I do worry about the state of things now, though. I'm afraid.
Well,
you know, and that's the right word. I do have fear that we're slinking too far in a certain direction, and it's away from strength and leadership.
Yeah, because there is this way of thinking that says, oh, strength and leadership is just oppression. And the problem is that, how do I say this without making it sound like I don't like people? Because that's not true. But we're kind of a herd mentality a lot of the time. There's a reason Jesus would talk about, you know, sheep and a shepherd. You know, you've got that mass impulse of emotion or whatever. It's why I love to go to a movie at a movie. I like that mass emotion. I'm going along with the crowd. But you've got to have a leader, because all together as a mass, you can go right over the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just following the bellwether and she's not paying attention.
Right. So, yeah. So I don't know. I don't know what if we're going to solve any of those problems here. But
No, except we probably made everybody on both sides mad, and we didn't mean to do it. We're just talking.
Yeah. But this movie does have a political statement. And,
yeah, it definitely makes a statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's definitely worth considering.
Well, and that's, you know, kind of interesting, because so here we are, we're talking about the politics, and I'm saying, oh, this side and that side. But the thing that really also intrigued me about the way the movie was set up was you have two agents. And remember, toward the end, M says, orphans always do make the best recruits. And so you know that they were both orphans. They were both coming from a tough background. Probably M had to wrangle with Silvio,
yeah,
Silva, I guess.
Silva.
Silva, that's mm-hmm. it. I knew that didn't sound right. just like she did Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And she made decisions that she greatly regrets that she had to do. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
But how did they react? Because you can't change the way the world comes at you. It's how do you internalize it and how do you choose to act about it?
Right.
And that's the real Catholic thing too, is to stop and examine what you're doing, how you're understanding what people did. Do you give a more charitable interpretation?
Yeah, and also internalizing your experience and getting past your past experience.
Yes.
And using that to inform your future, too.
Yes. Mm. So well said, Scott.
Thank you.
Yeah. Because there's Bond and there's Silva, and he obviously did not react well. And, you know, Bond had dropped out. He clearly did resent it.
He quit.
Yeah,
he did
clearly
resign.
Resented it and was like, I'm not coming back. And then what happens? He comes back because England's under attack. But I think he really came back because M was under attack. He just knew they needed him.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, because he saw that on the television and he saw whose office it was. And
yeah.
And then he showed up.
Yeah.
And, then and he acts like he couldn't stand her. But at the same time, you know, you just know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so even though they were both, in a sense, betrayed by M, he was able to kind of internalize it and understand why she had to do what she had to do. Whereas Silva's going around, I mean, and I get it. He was horribly betrayed and 5 months of torture and all this kind of thing. And he went through awful stuff. But he doubtless done horrible things himself. Mm-hmm. And he acted like he was just the most innocent person in the world.
Yeah, that's right. It was like as an excuse, you know, what happened to me is an excuse for what I'm doing.
Yeah. So you also have to take a real clear look at yourself and your own culpability in what's going on.
Right. How cool. And yeah. And then there is, yeah, just I love, you know, how it's getting more personal, because it is, you know, I'm getting older. And I am feeling this way, like you said, you know, I'm finding myself on the wrong side of a lot of things. And and it's just like, you know, things that I loved growing up and, you know, you hang on to. But, you know, new people are doing that stuff now, and I don't agree with a lot of it. Mm-hmm. You just let it go, and you're like, oh, that makes me sad, you know? Well, so
yeah. No, you're right, and I'm older than you are, so... But I think part of the great thing about getting older, I'll just pass this on to the people who aren't, is you've worked so long and so hard, hopefully, to try and change yourself a little, like become calmer. Don't just have such a knee-jerk reaction. Okay, I'm still struggling and will till I die, but I'm better at it. I'm better at being patient. I'm better at letting other people maybe have the right thing to say. I don't have to always be the one who says something.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't know that from this podcast, but I'm just saying. In a group meeting, happened. But, and then the other thing is to, you know, you said you were on the wrong side of things. I don't know if I'm on the wrong side of things. I may be in terms of I'm not on the popular side of things.
Right. That's what I meant to say.
But I think what's interesting is when you're not on the popular side of things, what you find out is there are zillions of people who are also not on the popular side of things. They're just not the ones talking.
Hmm.
Because that's the thing where, like my brother says, he's like, well, what you discover is you wind up talking a little bit in code as you feel people out. And the people who respond to the code are like, and I'm thinking of Christian stuff.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. where you'll somebody will say something and I'll go, oh,
yeah,
yes.
when you meet somebody new and you kind of dance around it until you realize that you've got something to say to each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've experienced that a lot lately where you're just like, this, that, you know, I know exactly what you're saying. And that's what people do. It's like, are you of my tribe? You are. Wonderful. Exactly. That's fantastic.
You had the right handshake.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's that thing of like you could even just be checking out at the grocery store and somebody will be talking about something. Mm-hmm. And you go, oh, I completely understand. And they look at you suddenly and go, oh, I'm a Christian too. Okay. You know, I can't say this to everyone.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, yep. And it's funny how that is.
It is funny.
Yeah. And it's not that, you know, maybe you're feeling oppressed or anything. It's just that it's not a popular thing to say. And I think because it's not considered a given anymore, people talk about it more than they used to. But, in the 1950s, nobody would have even bothered mentioning it.
Well, I live in a different world, a world within the world, I would say. You know, because I am in, you know, most people that I meet are religious people.
That's interesting, mm-hmm. right?
Most people, I would say 75%. Yeah, friendly, very good folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I would also say, I think people would be surprised. I feel that most of the people I know are religious people too, but no one talks about it.
Mm.
No one mentions it. They'll wear a crucifix or whatever, and it's not like everybody's going around, I don't know, acting, you know, hiding it. But
it's just they don't talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. They just
They're not offering that to you as a.
Right.
Yeah.
Or they might, like I said, they might see you're wearing a crucifix or whatever and they'll say something about it. Like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so frowned upon in terms of, you know, it's not progressive.
Right. Or whatever. Exactly. Yeah. Fascinating. Wow. This has taken us all kinds of places.
I know.
It's just a James Bond movie, for heaven's sakes.
This is why it's the best one. Come on,
so,
man.
Yeah. So let's talk about the movie itself. First of all, does it have the best theme song of all of them? Because I think it does.
I don't know. Goldfinger.
I like this one better. Yeah.
Well, okay. This one is great, and Adele's voice is amazing.
Yeah, and it's cool how she. I think that she wrote it or co-wrote it.
She and the producer wrote it.
Okay, but it's really cool how they incorporated. It's definitely Bond. You listen to it and you're like, oh, that's a James Bond song.
Yeah.
Even if you had no idea.
Yeah. Well, and the opening credits are really wonderfully done.
Very good. Yeah.
Casino Royale were also really amazingly done. But these, once you've seen the movie once and you're watching these credits, you go, whoa, there's so much symbolism as to exactly what was going on in the movie. Mm. Somebody really worked hard on those.
Yeah, yeah. And it was really dreamlike. And, he was floating in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Probably hallucinating, not sure if he was going to survive. Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
Really, yeah, whoever did that, that's really great stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It was really great.
Cool. And then, like you said, all of the little nods to the, you know, Star Trek. I said Star Trek.
Well, another long franchise.
Yeah, not unlike, you know, that first Star Trek movie with all of the nuggets they left in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is interesting comparison, isn't it, between those two? A lot of this kind of reboot stuff taking place. But James Bond is constantly getting rebooted. This is the only series or, you know, short series of movies that I know of in the Bonds, and I haven't seen all of them, so correct me if I'm wrong, where it seemed to be connected. It's like, you know, most James Bond movies end where they start so that the next one can just start and end.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Think you're right.
These three kind of, you know, remember Casino Royale left him, you know, adrift, and then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, like you said, it was more like one story, but that it's like a mini series in the series.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and of course, it's not sure, but you know, when you think of a long franchise like this, it's the only one where it's got one main character, but they are free to change out actors because the actors get too old to be James Bond. And so here's another one.
And it makes it so new. Every time they do that, it's exciting. It's amazing how that's come up. You know, 26 movies later, and there's just this whole, it's like a mythos that's constantly rebooted,
mm-hmm.
like a comic book or whatever.
Because I remember somebody, I was reading something about Skyfall, and they were going, well, after the cartoonish Roger Moore James Bond ones, and I'm like, hey, that's when I started watching James Bond, and I actually have a real soft spot for those. I mean, the Sean Connery ones are, you know, started it, and I like these, but they have their own charm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with all the over-the-top stuff and the underground things with all the, you know, people in the white uniforms with the machine guns, and it's just, they have their own time period that works for me too.
Yeah. Daniel Craig is definitely my favorite. I mean, to me,
it's a real toss up between him and Sean Connery for me. I think he really evokes Sean Connery so much.
Yeah, maybe he does. Style. And he's, you know, I find Daniel Craig so serious. He's really, you know, serious about it when he does it.
Yes.
But Sean Connery was a little playful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and Roger Moore was very playful, but.
Oh,
know.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Pierce Brosnan, I watched most of those when they came out, but I found him fairly forgettable, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Except for whichever one it was where Sean Bean was 006.
Ooh.
That, because I was so interested because there was another 00. And also, that's the one where Sean Bean really came to my attention.
Poor Sean Bean.
I love him so much.
Yeah, that poor, poor guy.
Yeah, I know. Well, he's working a lot, though.
He is. It's okay for him. Good for him. Yeah.
He's got a lot of work.
Yeah.
Thinking of this movie for a second, since we were talking about religion before, since that's what we do.
Yeah.
Did you think about, you know, you have the story arc, as you're saying, you've got this whole mother-son sort of situation going on, loosely done, but definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the showdown is in a chapel, which is the last bastion of traditionalism.
Interesting, yeah.
And when at the end, M is dying and then dead, and they pull, and you see him, he's crying, and he's kneeling on the floor with her in his arms, and they pull back, and you see him from the back with his head bent over her, and there's the cross up there, and it's like a reverse pieta.
I was just going to say, as you described it, that
the
is
son
really cool.
Holding the mother, so it's the reverse honoring of that whole relationship as something that. I don't know if you could say they thought it was holy, but clearly it was centrally important.
Yeah. So, interesting. That is fascinating. Yeah, that's great. That's great. I love that thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very nice.
Because they don't put a cross in anything without knowing it's there. It's never an accident.
That's true. That's true.
But.
Yeah. Well, very good. That's cool. Yeah, I was looking at the director to see what he's done in the past, Sam Mendes.
Mm-hmm.
And he did American Beauty was his first one.
Okay, I never saw that.
Yeah, what a movie that was.
Really?
I
heard it was tough.
It was, and so I that's didn't what watch I meant. It. That, it's very tough. Okay. It's very tough. But
I avoid a lot of tough movies.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin Spacey was great in that movie. Then Road to Perdition with Tom Hanks.
Yep. I think that was also a tough movie, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, very.
Yeah. I bet you've seen that, right? So, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, what so else? An interesting thing. And then Jarhead
with Gyllenhaal. No, I haven't seen it, Gyllenhaal, but I understand it was tough.
Yeah.
I'm sensing a theme.
This is a tough guy. Then something I haven't ever even heard of, Revolutionary Road,
which looks okay. I've heard of that. I don't remember anything about it.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't see it.
And then Away We Go, which looks like a romantic comedy with John Krasinski, who was Jim in The Office.
Oh, okay.
And then Skyfall, and then Spectre. And then Bond 25 rumored.
Well, also he did Casino Royale.
No, he didn't. I don't believe he did.
Didn't he?
No. Let's look up who did that. Now I know that Mark Forster did the middle one.
Yes.
But Casino Royale was a different person. It was Martin Campbell. And let's see what he's famous for. Oh, lots of Bond, it looks like. GoldenEye. Oh, not lots of Bond. Another Bond. So he did GoldenEye.
Hmm, okay.
And then The Legend of Zorro, The Mask of Zorro.
Oh, right, okay.
Vertical Limit, Edge of Darkness, Green Lantern. Warriors. Don't tell me they're remaking Warriors. Nope. It's not that Warriors. Have you seen The Warriors?
No.
Yeah. Walter Hill movie. Very good. Very fun.
Well, Walter Hill, he's another one who liked doing kind of hard-edged movies.
Right, right. It's a gang movie from the 70s, I believe.
Yeah.
The Warriors.
I rewatched part of 48 Hours about a month ago, and I remember just loving that when it came out. Saw it was streaming. Said, I'll watch and see if it's still any good. And, of course, you know, it's Nick Nolte and
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
And of course, their relationship was good, but I had forgotten that, you know, it's quite brutal in the violence and everything, and there's nudity and all this. And I'm like, oh, I forgot what the 70s were like making and watching movies. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Walter Hill. I remember that name now.
Wow. Yep. Yeah, and Mark Forster, who did the middle one, he did Stranger Than Fiction, which is one of my all-time favorite movies, thanks to you. I don't think I'd ever would have seen it. But love that movie so much, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad, because that's one of the greats.
That's right.
And he also did, this one isn't as great, but it's very interesting to watch, and sometime I might pick it for a religious movie. He did Machine Gun Preacher.
Hmm.
And I mean, and that starred, was it Gerard Butler from 300 and Michelle, oh gosh, I can't remember her name. I want to say Monahan, but you know, some woman who, young woman who was really super popular at the time and true story kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting movie. So he did that right before he did World War Z.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, fascinating.
Isn't that funny to think of the person who did Stranger Than Fiction doing those other movies?
Yeah, it really is. It's so something different. Else. You know, and I know he didn't write Stranger Than Fiction, but what a great movie.
Didn't he write it?
I don't think he did. Let me look here. Zach Helm wrote it.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks to the internet. It's not all coming from my mind. It's because I remember when we did the podcast on it, I saw a thing where the writer was talking about writing it.
Okay.
So that's why I just remembered it wasn't him.
Okay, I thought he also wrote it, so. Well, I was giving him too much credit.
Well, the question is, what else has Zach Helm written?
I'm not going to guess. I've been wrong about everything.
Well, Mr. Majorium's Wonder Emporium. Yeah, Good Canary. I've never heard of that one. And it looks like a remake of Jumanji, which is coming out in 2016.
Is that something that needs to happen? No. I'm really wondering.
I can't believe that they're out of ideas.
Do they need Hollywood to throw their money at stuff that bad?
They could make another Bond movie.
Yeah, well, I think that's going to happen.
Let him make it. Yeah, of course it's going to happen. They're going to keep going. Yep. But I wonder if Daniel Craig is finished.
Well, he's told different things to all these different people.
Yeah.
All these interviews, this is my last one. I'll keep doing it as long as they want me to. So I think he's just having fun right now.
Having
yanking
a good time.
People's chain.
Yeah, why not? Go make some different movies.
You have to say, what I like about Daniel Craig, personally, I mean, I don't pay much attention to celebrities if I can help it. And he doesn't do anything to make me have to pay attention to him, which I appreciate. But he's married to Rachel Weisz, or Weiss, however you say her name, who was the female love interest in About a Boy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they got married when, I think she was 40 and he was maybe also close to that age. And it was their first marriage and they've been super faithful to each other. I mean, I think, and I haven't checked up on that part, but I mean, and you don't ever hear about their marriage. I mean, I think they're just married.
Yeah.
And I really liked that about both of them.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't hear that too often.
Yeah.
That's good.
I also remember hearing that when in, not Quantum of Solace, Casino Royale, and he's watching the dailies or whatever, and he sees that one part that looks like they deliberately planned an homage to Ursula Andress, is that her name? Coming out of the water in Dr. No, when she's walking out in that bikini and the camera's on her, and you're like, whoa, what a shot. And he, at one point, is coming out of the water in his Speedos or whatever he's wearing, and it's a similar sort of shot. And actually, they said it's just because he happened to hit a sandbar that was there, so it kind of made him magically rise out of the water. But he was watching that, and he went, okay, my career is never going to be the same. This is going to be really different.
Oh, wow. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just funny.
It is funny. It's got to be something to be a star in this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And hopefully keep your head.
Hopefully he is. Yeah.
Hopefully.
Sounds like he is, but that's good.
Yeah, we hope.
That's fantastic.
Seems like it.
Well, cool. Well, do we have anything else to say about Bond?
I don't.
57 hours worth of movies here. Yeah. I'm going to go back and watch Dr. No. That'll be fun.
Oh, yeah.
Because I haven't seen that for a long, long time. And there's a lot of Bond movies that I haven't seen, but I don't feel any need to go through and watch them all.
Right.
But Dr. No is definitely one I will.
Yeah, because it's the first one, so it sets all your expectations, and it's just marvelous.
Yeah. Do you have any other spy series kind of things that you follow? Go ahead.
I have a few book series that I've read some of, but I don't. Yeah, nothing that comes to mind. I've read some of the Bond. I read all the Bond books, and it was when I was a teenager and I was looking for the dirty stuff. You know, I'll just say it. And it wasn't spelled out nearly enough for me, but they didn't seem to be very well written to me. I mean, they were okay. And then I was talking to my mom about a year ago, maybe, and she said, you know, everybody's talking about Ian Fleming. So I tried two of his books, and I didn't like them. I didn't think they were very well written. And I went, that's what I thought. She went, oh, that makes me feel better.
Oh, that's funny.
And she reads everything, so I kind of trust her on that anyway. Yeah. But it was just funny. So how about you?
Well, I like the Bourne movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like the, it's kind of similar to these in that, you know, they're hopping around Europe.
I loved those. Yeah. Did you watch the fourth one?
I never did see the fourth one, no.
I meant to. It was supposed to be a really good, you know, carrying on.
Yeah, yeah.
I think didn't it have somebody like Jeremy Renner in it?
Yeah, that was it.
In itself.
Yeah, Jeremy Renner.
I'd watch it.
Why not? Yeah, I think a book that I really like is called A Game of Foxes. which is by Ladislaw Ferrago. It's non-fiction about World War II spies.
Oh, okay.
Super good. World War II is endlessly fascinating.
Evidently.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to go that way, I mean, there's Alistair MacLean.
Oh, yeah.
And his were,
I used to read him a lot. I used to read a lot of his.
Yeah. I read and reread his.
Bear Island.
Oh, Ice Station Zebra.
Yeah, Ice Station Zebra, yes.
The Guns of Navarone.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, come on. And then also, I would say, if somebody wants, they're not strictly spy books, but they have a lot of that, almost that Elmore Leonard feel, but before Elmore Leonard, I think. And they're by Ross Thomas. And he wrote, oh, gosh, maybe he wrote 40 books. And they were all so good. People like Lawrence Block will go, oh, my gosh, if only I could write like Ross Thomas. Oh, I mean, wow. He wrote these really twisty plots. He wrote these hard-edged characters. And they just were endlessly fascinating. And within those, he had a few characters who he would have them in their own series. But he'd do a lot of standalone books. So it wasn't like you were always waiting around for the next, you know, whatever. Book, but okay. Those, every time I've picked one of those up, I haven't been disappointed. They're really wonderful.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So
excellent. Well, thank you much.
Definitely recommend those.
Awesome. All right. Well, okay. What do we got? We got coming up
next.
Ooh, next is our religious pick. Leif by Niggle by J.R.R. Tolkien and The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis. We're going to do both of those in the next show.
Yeah, Leif by Niggle is a short story, and The Great Divorce is very short.
Yep.
So
I've got them both, and I'm ready. Yep.
Excellent.
Excellent. Wonderful. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe out there.
Watch out when you drink your water.
If anybody has listened this far, I appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. We hope we haven't alienated everyone we know.
Awesome. All right.
But I guess that's just what you have to do if you're going to talk about James Bond.
That's right. All right. Well, take care, everybody.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.